Hear ye. The Supreme Court of the State of Wisconsin is now in session. Silence is commanded.
Please be seated. Well, good morning. We have a full house, but before you begin, Counselor, I have a couple of things that I have to do. We have some students that are with us this morning, a group of homeschool students from Sun Prairie. If they are here, will they please stand? Very good. Thank you for joining us. And then we have Rockford Christian School. Would you please stand if you're here? Very nice. Thank you. Please be seated. We have a full house. Are there any students that I missed that I didn't mention? No? All right. Well, the students are here on a program that we operate in coordination with the State Bar called Court with Class. So the students have had an opportunity to see the briefs that you've written, and they know a little bit about the case. Now, when a second oral argument of the morning is concluded, a justice will come and talk to the students, and the justice who's going to do that today, and it's not about the merits of the case, just sort of about how the Supreme Court operates and fits in with our court system. It's Justice Daniel Kelly, and Justice Kelly happens to homeschool, so isn't that nice? So he will be out if you all can come back after the second argument, and more than the students are welcome, so if others want to listen to Justice Kelly, we maintain an open courtroom, and we're very happy to have all of you come. Okay, so with that out of the way, we'll get back to the matter for which we've gathered this morning. I have a little different than the usual lineup on how you all are going to be speaking and presenting your cases, and I want to go over the time with you because if I don't have it right, I'd like you to correct it so we all are on the same page as we start. Okay, so we're going to start out with 20 minutes by attorney Hermaid Amadou. Okay, so you say French, you dissolve the H. And then 5 minutes by attorney Shah. All right, very good. 30 minutes by attorney Bitar. Okay, and then 5 minutes again by attorney Hermaid. All right, and are you ready to go?
I am.
Okay, please proceed.
May it please the court, I'm Jordan Hamiden of Michael Best and Friedrich. I represent Golden Sands Dairy, and I'm honored to appear before this court today. Seated behind me and to your left are Lewis and Jim Wysocki, whose company owns Golden Sands. The Wysockis have been successfully farming in this state for decades. What do we want? We ask that you reverse the Court of Appeals decision in this case, and in doing so, clarify for developers and municipalities alike that the submission of a building permit for a project, building permit application, creates a vested right to use the property of the project consistent with the zoning law at the time the application was submitted, regardless if the property is 20 acres or if it's 6,000 acres. Now, justice, more than anything, requires reversal of the Court of Appeals decision, because if it's allowed to stand, the Wysockis will lose millions they invested in reasonable reliance on the unrestricted zoning classification that was in place when they made that investment and filed their building permit application.
Counsel, I want to make sure that I got what you just said correctly. So it's the vested right to use the property associated with what was it that you said?
With the project.
With the project.
That's the subject of the building permit application.
Does that request go beyond what the newly enacted 66-100-something-or-another provides?
Your Honor, it does not go beyond it. In fact, it's completely consistent with it.
And I think that's one of the issues, isn't it? In part, the issues focus on the language of that statute with regard to the word adjacent in 1D of that statute.
I think that is...
As I read the briefs, that's what it appears.
That's correct. And I think our point with regard to the statute, which we would concede doesn't apply here because it was enacted afterwards, is consistent in terms of how it defines project in a couple of ways. First, the project transcends buildings. it's the land development, and here we have a land development of a dairy farm. But secondly, when it talks about adjacency in the statute, which is not something that we find in the common law described with any particularity, but when it talks about adjacency, it defines adjacency in 1D as adjacent parcels of land which include land separated by roads, waterways, and easements. And you can see on the map that actually the town of Saratoga has proposed to use as an exhibit, and which is up here to the left, that the lands meet that definition by and large. There may be a small parcel or two that stand out that are separated by something other than what's described, but for the vast, vast majority, that project fits the project depicted there fits the definition in the statute.
Your opposing counsel will argue that there's land that separates them, and I guess we can look and find out.
I think they will argue that. Mm-hmm. But the point of our appeal here is to not only get justice for the Wysockis, but to preserve the bright line building permit rule in a meaningful form in this state and to be faithful to the building permit rule's underlying principles. Now, a very short discussion of the facts. Underlying our claim to vested rights are three ultimate facts that the circuit court found and which it applied when it ruled in favor of Golden Sands in this case. And as much as the town tries to obscure or compete with them, the court's ultimate factual findings were not appealed. First, when the Wysockis did their due diligence in this case, paid for the preparation of numerous and voluminous applications to the town, state, to the county, expended millions in doing so, and ultimately submitted their building permit, all of the project land was within the unrestricted zoning district of Wood County. Second, the building permit application submitted to the town disclosed the nature, scope, and size of the project. It could not have been mistaken to be about anything other than what we've asserted all along in this case. The application identified the project as a dairy farm with buildings and farmland on over 6,000 acres of property, complete with a colored map, which has been blown up here for you today, and volumes of materials that left no doubt what the project was. Third fact, the zoning ordinance that the town now wishes to impose on this project was enacted after Golden Sands filed its building permit application and indeed in reaction to it.
It almost sounds to me, counsel, as if you're using application in the singular as opposed to the plural. There was an amended application here, right?
There was a building permit application which was filed on June 6th.
Yes.
And then at some point within a few weeks after that and before the town actually passed its
July
moratorium,
July
17th, Mr. Wysocki was met out in the parking lot by the building inspector while the town board was in session with council on the phone with council and made him fill out another application right there on the spot. Sort of a gun to the head situation. But what's important is that the circuit court found that application was complete before the town did anything to regulate land use any different.
Well, the question I was going to ask you, as to the amended application, did the amended application include a description of all of the land that's at issue, all of the 6,300 some acres?
I don't think the piece of paper that Mr. Wysocki was required to fill out in the parking lot on that day did anything in addition to what was already contained in the application with respect to describing the project land.
So it's the amended application had what effect in your view?
In my view, and I think this is consistent with the trial court's findings, it really didn't do anything. It was just something Mr. Wysocki was compelled to do at the request of the building inspector as part of the town's horsing Golden Sands around with respect to getting its building permit. All of the materials in what was submitted to the town were with the town on June 6, 2012, and they were there and in the town's possession when Mr. Wysocki filled out that extra piece of paper at the building inspector's request.
So what was different about that extra piece of paper?
I don't think there was anything substantively different about it or that amended what it was that Golden Sands intended to do. I think what the manifestation of Golden Sands' intent was contained in the application materials that they filed on June 6th, and nothing about that changed when Mr. Wysocki was asked to fill out, frankly, an unnecessary piece of paper. The only difference was the building permit form, the building inspector said we should use a different form for this project than the form that you submitted, but the information on the form demonstrated the intent, and the Court of Appeals found that it was substantially complete and therefore subject to the benefit of the building permit rule.
I think the Court of Appeals found that prior to July 19th, it was substantially complete.
I think that's correct. 17th. I can't remember.
I know, but I think it was the 19th, whatever the record will reflect.
In any event, before the town undertook any land use regulation.
That's correct.
Regulation.
I have problems, and I need your help knowing what exactly we are reviewing as an application for a building permit. For instance, when I looked at the record yesterday, it appeared to me that, and I'm focusing on the answer of the town to the amended complaint, in answer to paragraph 50, they indicated as part of the record that what they received on July 18th, the town received a building permit application form and a check. And they then say, this is what we received, and it's a check, and the amended application, a next page building permit application legal description, and the final page exhibit to Wisconsin uniform building permit application with computations that come up to 317,000 plus square feet. Is that the amended application in its total?
No, I think the amended application are the materials that were filed on June 6th plus whatever additional information or different information was contained in that piece of paper that Mr. Wysocki was required to fill out.
Well, I look at the affidavit of Mr. Wysocki, and he indicates in the affidavit notarized on April 5th of 2015. This is the affidavit in support of the motion for summary judgment in this case. And in paragraph 15, he refers to all of these copies of permits and plans and stuff as merely courtesy copies of information that he filed along with the building permit application. He says in paragraph 15, all the applications were prepared and submitted under my direction and guidance. The building permit application, which I personally submitted to the town, included courtesy copies of the WPDES permit application, the documents submitted to Wisconsin Department of Revenue with it, and the applications for high-capacity wells and Wood County Animal Waste Storage Facility permit application. I understand from that, and just for your assistance, again, I was reading from paragraph 15 of that affidavit, that those and your opposing counsel argues that those are not part of the application itself, but merely courtesy copies.
I think some of those materials that you mentioned certainly were intended to be called courtesy copies when that was filed, but there are many other materials prior to those courtesy copies which show the manifest intent for how big the project is, what we're going to do. And if you look at the June 6th submission, it lists that there's a uniform building permit application form, a map depicting the project site is part of the building permit application.
Is that what we have here that's
now blown up.
Yeah, but that was part of the DNR application.
But it was attached to and used as part of the building permit application.
Okay. And I didn't the only place that I saw that was part of the DNR permit application as part of that courtesy copy.
What I'd like to do at this point is get back to the examination of the law that's required here.
Counsel, before you jump into that, I want to pose my question to you, and I'll do that as briefly as possible so you can get into it. But could you identify for me what portion beyond the 98 acres that Golden Sands actually owned at the time of the building permit application? Did it own any of that land?
What it owned was the right, the contract right to purchase that land.
It had a contract right, but it did not have an ownership or title interest, correct?
That's correct.
Could you address for me what law would grant your client vested rights in property it does not own?
Well, I think we have to look, let's look at McKee first, Your Honor. McKee talks about the purpose of the Bright Line Building Permit Rule to balance the interests of landowners, developers who often don't own the land they're developing, municipalities, and courts. There's a case, Shear v. Weiss, back 1961, 13 Wisconsin 2nd, 408 at 413, where this court held that the contract purchaser of property is entitled to apply for and receive a building permit. It follows, and if you look at the context of the cases like McKee, that that's more than a sufficient right to earn vested rights. After all, what we're trying to do is protect investment. And the developers made the investment not only in the rights to purchase the land, but in many other things. In this case, in the hundreds of thousands of dollars, even millions, to prepare applications to buy those rights to buy the land. Now, with that, I'd like to get into what the building permit rule protects. Here, it's clear with this court's precedent that protects the right to use property, not the right to just to construct buildings. Those cases, that principle is found in the context of Lake Bluff, Rosenberg, Pagels, and DeJardine, and most recently, McKee. We find the Court of Appeals decision, however, says that the Bright Line Building Permit Rule covers only the right to construct or alter a structure, and that's in paragraph 15 of their decision. The Court of Appeals formulation is not supported by this court's holding in McKee. The focus on land use rights is reflected in McKee at paragraph 43 when it explained that the purpose of the rule, Bright Line Building Permit Rule, is to create predictability for landowners, developers, municipalities, and courts. Predictability about what? That answer is found in the same paragraph of McKee, where the court explained that the Bright Line Building Permit Rule balances the need of the municipality to regulate land use with a landowner's interest in developing property. You see, land use and development property transcend the mere building or alteration of a structure. And McKee goes on to tell us not only what rights are protected by the rule, but how the policy balance is to be struck. Paragraphs 43 and 47 of your decision tell us that a municipality has the flexibility to regulate land use up until the point that a developer files a complete building permit application that conforms to the zoning or building code requirements in effect at the time. Put simply, in the context of this case, the town was free to regulate land use until on Golden Sands property in any lawful way it wished up until the time Golden Sands filed its building permit application. Now, the other side of that balance is that the developer has the right to rely on the zoning in place up until the time the developer submits that application. Because the town did not obtain zoning authority or enacted zoning ordinance until after Golden Sands filed its application, it can't apply its zoning ordinance to Golden Sands property. Okay, now that we see what McKee and its precedents do in terms of standing for the proposition that what the rule protects is land use, not just building construction, we examine the extent of the use that's protected. And once you accept that the Bright Line Building Permit Rule protects the right to use property for a certain purpose, it follows that the purpose of the rule is gravely undermined if the right to property use stops at the building envelope. Why? Developers do not invest in structures. They invest in projects. They don't need predictability to build a building. They need predictability about how they're going to use the property. Here, the project is a dairy farm with buildings to house animals and machines and feed and surrounding land to grow the feed and land spread the nutrients, just like almost all the farms we drive past as we travel through this state. The purpose of the rule is to create predictability for landowners and developers when they file a complete building permit application, and it must include the use of the property associated with the project. But what's happened? The Court of Appeals has now bifurcated the analysis. Okay, we'll accept the application of the building permit rule for sake of building the buildings, but we're going to apply the actual and active use test for your land, associated land surrounding the building.
Well, they shifted the issue, though. They shifted the issue from the building permit rule to whether you were arguing for a nonconforming use. Correct?
They shifted that analysis, but they created the distinction that wasn't created in Wisconsin law before. And I'm not going to stand here and tell you that the contrary proposition is found in Wisconsin law either. Our point here is that if you allow the Court of Appeals distinction out of whole cloth, frankly, to stand, the building permit rule has no useful effect for its underlying purpose,
Counsel,
which is to create predictability.
You are riding, if I may use the phrase, the horse of the building permit exception in this case. Is that correct?
That's correct.
You are not riding the horse of the active and non-conforming use. Is that correct?
No, we are not, Your Honor.
And you are not asking, unlike in McKee, you are not asserting a takings claim. Is that correct?
We are not asserting a takings claim here today, no.
Counsel, how accurately do you need to identify the land that is part of the project for it to be covered by the building permit rule?
Well, I don't know how accurately that is, but what's important, Justice Kelly, in this case, is that I don't know how we could have identified it any more clearly. We have the map that the town of Saratoga has put up there where we outlined in very careful detail what the project was, and the materials that were included with the application included full-page foldouts of every single parcel that's included on that map.
The town says, well, there's no legal description of the property. Is that the standard, or
there's
should
no
it?
What, Your Honor?
There's no legal description of the property?
Well, I don't think that you have to have a legal description of the property. I don't think that's found anywhere in law. And I think what that brings us to is, why do we have the description? Why is the description important when we're talking about vested rights? What's important about this description, and I tell you I can't find this in Wisconsin law either, but it makes a lot of sense. The reason we have a description when we're doing this analysis is because we want to know what the bounds of the vested rights are. And you can see what the bounds of those are. And it's important for two purposes. First of all, to establish what the right is that's being protected. And second of all, to make sure that we don't go beyond it. Because once that's set, and it's a permitted nonconforming use under the Bright Line Building Permit Rule, we can't go and do something else. We can't go and put a 3,000-acre LED screen manufacturing property on it or do anything else that's inconsistent with the purposes for which we described in the application. I think that what's very important to do here, too, is to not let the scale of this project drive the result in this case. There's no size differentiation built into the Bright Line Building Permit Rule. I don't think we'd be here today if what we were talking about is a couple of small barns and 40 acres surrounding it to grow feed for a hobby farm or for a very small farm. And I think that that's something to keep in mind. But that seems to be what motivated the Court of Appeals in this case more than anything when it started asking its rhetorical questions about, well, how much land is really needed for this project? And its assertion that adjoining use of land creates different issues. Well, these are not different issues that have ever been a concern of this court before when it's applied the building permit rule, and I see my time is up, and I would conclude with just one sentence, which is, if the Wysockis don't get the benefit of the building permit rule, they will unjustly be deprived of a very large and very reasonable investment they made in
Thank
reliance
you.
On existing law.
Thank you.
May it please the Court, Deputy Solicitor General Sobin Shaw for the State of Wisconsin. Based on a two-step application of principles in Wisconsin law, Golden Sands has a vested right in Wood County's unrestricted zoning for all 6,000-plus acres based on its undisputed right to use its seven buildings for farming because, one, it overtly manifested its intent to use all the land as a single farm in its building permit application and associated materials, and two, the use, farming, is unique and adaptable to all the land.
Does the state have any concern about any discrepancy that might have been in the original application as opposed to the amended one?
Under our formulation of the rule, no. An overt manifestation can take many forms, not just a permit application even. So courts have considered moving heavy equipment onto all of the property to be an overt manifestation as one example.
Counsel, your opposing counsel made it clear that, if you will, what horse he was riding, the application for the building permit exception to the general rule. And that's why it's important to know what is, what constitutes the application for the building permit here. What is your position, to follow up Justice Gableman's question, of what constituted the contents of the July 17th amended building permit application?
I think that under the two-step analysis, the overt manifestation would include all of the associated filings with the building permit application. And
do you have anything other than you think that it would include the overt manifestations? Do you have anything to contradict the answer of the plaintiffs to the amended complaint in this issue when they attached as Exhibit G the items that were received as part of the July 17th application?
I believe that they are an additional piece of information, but as counsel stated, the building permit application that was filed with many hundreds of pages and associated materials on June 6th also serves as an overt manifestation. And to your earlier question about the horse that we are riding, I think this two-step application of principles is sort of the nexus between the active and actual use doctrine and Wisconsin's bright line building permit rule. The practical effect of Wisconsin's building permit rule is as if Golden Sands was actively and actually using the seven buildings for farming at the time of the ordinance. This court protects active and actual use because owners who are actively using their land have made substantial expenditures in reasonable reliance on local law. We look to the building permit application for the same reasons, reasonable reliance and investment, as this court stated in McKee. Thus, in some way, the building permit serves as a substitute for active and actual use.
Well, you have a different, totally different law, Counselor. Active and active use is a test for whether you can continue non-conforming use, right? It's a different law. The law that's here is whether the building permit protects doing what the petitioners argue they have a legal right to do.
I think they are related analyses, because the point of each inquiry is to protect the same things, investment and reliance.
Well, I give you that. The policies certainly are similar, but when we're deciding whether they meet the building permit test, I don't think you want to argue to us that somehow they fit within actual use in this property.
Certainly under
actual
the,
and active, I guess it is.
Sorry, Your Honor. Certainly under the bright line building permit rule, Golden Sands obtained the right to build those seven structures. I do think, though, that the Court of Appeals had some concerns about having a backstop to the rights that a building permit application would get one applicant. And so here at the second step of the state's analysis, this unique and adaptable or integral use inquiry, it asks whether everything is part of the same project. And to that end, the integrated use or unity of use concept from eminent domain is informative. I see my red light is on. If there are no further questions.
Thank you.
May it please the court. Ramzi Buttar, on behalf of the town of Saratoga, I am very pleased to represent the 5,300 residents in the town of Saratoga. There's been a lot of talk about overt manifestations, intent, expectations, and cheer. That is not the law. There is a general rule that no one has vested rights in this state in expectations of zoning. There are two narrow exceptions, and Golden Sands does not fall into either of those narrow exceptions. It is asking you to create, for the first time in this state, and probably anywhere in this country, a new rule involving vested rights. This court should not...
Can I get you to back up just for a minute? I need you to repeat for me why Scheer doesn't answer that question.
It doesn't answer the question because I don't even think it involves the issues in this case. The issues in this case are addressed by McKee just 9 months ago. They're addressed, Justice Ziegler, by your decision in Ryan versus Bazell, in which this court upheld the lawfulness and validity of zoning and recognized that it has to evolve. McKee recognized that as well.
But I don't think that Golden Sands is asserting a vested right in the zoning classification. As I understand their argument, they're asserting a vested right once the building permit application was filed to use the property in accordance with the building permit. And Scheer does say that the vendee, which Golden Sands is in this case, is an owner for the purpose of applying for a building permit.
That's right. And there's no dispute whatsoever that they have vested rights to the 7 buildings on 98 acres. That was what the building permit was for, and that's what I'm going to talk about in a moment.
But the building permit, excuse me, just real quick, does identify the project location as including 6,388 acres, which is well beyond the location of the buildings on 98 acres.
There is a scant reference to 6,300 acres. Let's get back to basics. Before we get into the basics of the law that they're asking you to upset, let's get into the basic facts. This is the building permit right here. Record 59, it's in the Affidavit of Wysocki, Exhibit B. As you'll see, it's about 4 or 5 pages long. This is the original building permit. There is no map attached to this permit. What does the building permit say? A scant reference to 6,300 acres. But the legal description over here, that jumble of Southwest by Southwest, 1/4 by 1/4, that's 98 acres. What does it say down here? Area involved, 317,000 acres. And if I've done my math, 317,000 square feet. And if I've done my math right, that is the equivalent of 7.2 acres.
Counselor, we were told that no action was taken to rezone before the amended permit was filed. Is that correct or incorrect?
That is correct, that there was no zoning in place before the initial building permit. But
Before the amended zoning permit.
Before the amended zoning permit. That came after in November of 2012. But again, Golden Sands filed a building permit. And here's the amended building permit.
I have them both. I want to clarify a fact because I misunderstood what you said when you were talking before. I thought you said that the zoning occurred or implied that it occurred between the filing of the initial zoning permit and the amended zoning permit, but opposing counsel said the zoning change occurred after the filing of the amended permit. And I just want to know, is that correct?
After, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you. Thank you.
This is the amended one, July 2017. They don't correct the legal description.
Counsel.
They maintain it at 100 acres for the property site, and they added a legal description.
Counsel, I don't want you to re-argue your factual propositions unless it's absolutely necessary. I want to point you to, would have been Golden Sands Appendix, page 48, contains the Circuit Court's findings of fact, which include this. The plaintiffs have identified their intended use of the land where they wish to put their fields, and the court would find, adequately documented it sufficiently in their findings, identified the 75 fields as you have identified on the map there. Are you challenging that factual finding?
Well, that factual, I suppose we are, because that factual finding is not in the right context. The court found at page, this is in their appendix, page 26, that the remaining acres were uncertain and evolving and had not yet been approved by the state of Wisconsin. That's at pages 67 and also at pages 72 and 73 of their appendix.
All right. So if, given that this is a factual finding that the court made, that it adequately identified the 75 fields that will be used in this project, what do you offer to demonstrate that that finding was clearly erroneous?
I think we're looking at different passages. The court later on twice found that the remaining parcels outside of the building site were uncertain and evolving at the pages that I referenced.
I understand. They were referring to the applications made to the state for the various permits that would be necessary to use this. But they did not, but the circuit court clearly identified that the filings were sufficient to demonstrate the scope of the project as including the 6,388 acres.
For that proposition that you're referring to, the court may have been relying upon the site's decision, which involves active and nonconforming uses, and the court relied upon concepts of synergy and whether there was synergy between prior uses and new uses.
Right now I'm just focusing on, did the circuit court say that Golden Sands had adequately identified the property involved in the project? The appendix site that I read to you seems like they said that it did. So what would you propose in opposition to that to show that that was clearly erroneous?
And maybe there's some confusion in the page numbers, but I'm looking at Golden Sands appendix page 032. The circuit court said, to the extent that Golden Sands Dairy is using the state permits to define the scope of the building permit, such permit applications do not provide sufficient specificity as to the scope of the project, because the scope of the project in those applications has been changing and no final approval has been given.
Yeah, so the page that I directed you to, counsel, was page 48 of the appendix. And I'd like you to address that.
And what line number, Your Honor?
Actually, let me see. Sorry, I might have had the wrong appendix. Page 46, on transcript page 87, lines 10 through 14. Here, however, the plaintiffs have identified their intended use of the land where they wish to put their fields, and the court would find adequately documented it sufficiently in their findings.
And if you look at that sentence in the context, the court is talking about the state applications that were filed. The building permit here was for 98 acres.
I understand that. So what I'm trying to get to is the court was referring to the 75 fields as being adequately identified to the project. Is that a clearly erroneous statement?
I don't think it's a clearly erroneous, but you have to look at the context. There is no dispute that the building permit identifies 98 acres in its legal description, and that was a finding of the circuit court. The circuit court also found that all the other land was evolving. The building permit was only for the 98 acres. The applications to the state of Wisconsin are irrelevant. They are not part of the building permit application. When you look at this court's decision in 2000 Willow Creek, it says that you do not get vested rights because you have filed materials with the state of Wisconsin. It also says that it remains the prerogative of local governments to engage in land use and zoning planning. I'd also point out that in the mandamus action, the building permit litigation before this case, if the town is bound by that decision, so is Golden Sands. Golden Sands specifically and repeatedly and consistently said the case in the application was only about 7 buildings on 98 acres. There has never been a dispute in that regard. So, of course, they get their 7 buildings and their 98 acres, and that is what is starred on that map, which, by the way, that map is buried in a 5-inch binder that was submitted to the state of Wisconsin as part of the WPDES permit.
Council, is one of the town's problems that this isn't one chunk of land? In other words, if this could have been the same acreage but without any spaces in between, with, say, the building property in the middle of that space, would the town be making these kind of arguments to us?
If I'm following your argument, yes, Your Honor, we would. And if you look at this map, I'll point out that this is a topographical map.
So yeah, I've looked at it, and there's another map that's got 3 pages in the appendix.
What's important to point out is that's 10 Mile Creek flowing at the bottom. That is not a raging river. There is a lot of land on both sides of that river. There is not adjacency.
My question was probably poorly put. But it is, if this were one chunk of land, not separated by the spaces that we all can see, would the town's position be the same?
In that case, they would have all of that land. The town's position would be the same, that all that land is adjacent and contiguous, and they have all that land.
Okay, so your problem then is with their falling within the rule because the land is not contiguous.
But see, we don't need to get there because we're talking about the new. We are talking about the new statute and concept of adjacency.
You know, whether you need to get there or not, it happens to be a question that I have.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I need to get there, even if you don't need to get there.
In this case, the building permit application identified 98 acres.
Okay.
And so if the 98 acres was one piece of land...
I understand that argument 100%.
Okay.
What I'm trying to find out is, sitting here where we are now with an argument that we're looking at more land than just what you say was in the building permit initially, is the town's problem the separateness of the parcels? If it were one big chunk of land for the same acreage without all these separations that we see, would the town's position be the same?
I think the town's positions would be the same.
Okay.
The town's problem is that the building permit only identified the 98 acres.
Okay,
Council,
so if this were one chunk of land, including all of these acres, the town would have no problem with it.
Correct.
Okay, that's all I wanted to try to figure out. Thank you.
I got a different result. I thought that was an inconsistent answer. And could you nail that down?
Can I try a slightly different way, Justice Brawley?
Yeah.
If the, I think the entire acreage was 6,300 acres, just all together, one big plot, but the building was only going to take place on a portion of that, whether it's 100 acres or whatever the buildings might actually occupy, would you have the same objection that you have today?
The town's objections would be the same because the town receives a building permit. The circuit court found that the building inspector's power was over the building permit. It is what is contained in the legal description of a building permit. I know I've said it before and you don't want to hear it, but here the building permit is 98 acres. So no matter how you change the hypothetical, the town's arguments and positions in this case would be the same because we are looking at what is in the building permit. The building permit is not a rule. This is not a Golden Sands rule. This is not how much money can you spend to get a permanent vested rights rule. It is a narrow exception.
Council,
to get vested
Council,
rights to
okay,
what is
just,
in
if
Council,
I could
me,
just finish up my question,
oh,
just
sure.
to
yeah.
finish
I'd
up my
like
thought.
Him to
so,
finish
so
his
if,
answer to
if,
Justice
if in fact, I understand his answer to Justice Ziegler. I want to turn the question the other way. If the building permit had attached this map with all the spaces in between, the town would have been required to issue the building permit for this with all the spaces in between.
Possibly. That would be a different occasion. Here they had an opportunity to do that. They didn't attach a map.
Okay,
they amended the permit. They didn't attach a map. And then in the mandamus building permit litigation, they said it's not about what's on the map and everything else. It's only
okay.
about the 98 acres. So to answer your question, Justice Rogancic, it might be a different situation. And it would certainly be a different situation under the new vested right rule. Golden Sands says their theory and their argument about integral land is consistent with the new statute. No, it is not. They are not only asking to blow up the vested rights laws in this state, but they're asking this court to issue a decision that's contradictory to the statute. The statute says, the new statute says defined and, actually it says specific and identifiable. They don't get that. That occurs on defined and adjacent parcels of land, which includes land separated by roads, waterways, and easements. You don't need to go beyond, as I said before, you don't even need to go to the new statute because it's not applicable here. But if you were to look at it, you look at the plain language, roads and waterways would not interfere with looking at what's adjacent, but adjacent would not be lands that are separated by all the plots of land on each side of Ten Mile Creek.
Okay, thank you very much. Thanks, Justice
yes.
Kelly, for letting me finish up.
Thank you. I want to. I just want to make sure that I understand your position on this completely clearly. I'm going to propose to you a hypothetical building permit, right? So forget the one that's there right now. And in this hypothetical building permit, It identifies the property involved as being 6,388 acres, and it provides the legal description of all 6,388 acres, right? And it says, I want to build seven buildings there. Would the town's objection today be the same?
It may not, because in that situation, we would be governed by the new statute and what the statute means by adjacency.
No, the statute does not apply. The only difference in the hypothetical is what I described. This is still pre-statute.
Okay.
Right? So would the town be telling Golden Sands that it did not have a vested right to use all 6,388 acres as agricultural?
It may not, because we'd be in a different situation. We would have a building permit that adequately and clearly described the full amount of acreage in the legal description, and in your scenario, they would be applying to the town to use all of that land, whereas in this case, not only do we have a bad legal description that itemizes only 98 acres, but they consistently said that we cannot engage, and that the circuit court could not engage in any analysis of all the remaining land because it was irrelevant. The problem with their argument is the uniqueness of their own situation. There's never been any other case in this state where someone is looking for land off-site and trying to bring that into the bright line building permit exception.
Okay, so if I understand correctly, then the town's objections are twofold. One, there's an insufficient legal description of the additional properties.
Correct.
And two, that it's non-contiguous.
Well, the contiguousness gets you into the new statute, and the new statute is
No, we're not talking about the new statute. We're just talking pre-statute. So is contiguity an issue for you?
Not under the common law.
Okay.
Not under the common law.
Right. So since we're being governed by the common law,
correct,
then the town's only real objection to this is your belief that there's an inadequate legal description.
Two objections. It is the inadequate legal description, and it is the fact that they applied for the seven buildings on only that 98 acres, and they refused to let the town or the circuit court, by their own admissions, engage in any analysis of that other land. They took it out of play. And the circuit court, in the first ruling on the building permit case, found that the case was only about the seven buildings on 98 acres. You have to remember the uniqueness of the situation. This is managed forest land. Who would have thought that someone would drop a concentrated animal feeding operation on managed forest land that's 6,000 acres? They're asking for a transformational impact. This land is not agricultural already. So nobody should be talking about or looking at the non-conforming use cases. And when you look at the building permit litigation and the litigation here, there's important concessions from Golden Sands. They agreed that the production area was only 98 acres. On that map, they talk about that production area as the dairy production site. You'll note that they don't call it the dairy production site anymore, because in the building permit litigation, they wanted it narrowed. They wanted only looking at the seven buildings on 98 acres, and now they want to call it everything else. If you look at the responses of Golden Sands to the town's proposed findings of fact, it's at record 81, numbers 65, numbers 36, number 40, and if you also look at their ultimate proposed finding of fact, number 5, they admitted that they were only looking for 98 acres involving seven buildings. They admitted they did not propose to construct buildings on the remaining acres. That's what the building permit exception is for. Where are you building your buildings? Where is the building site location? And they admitted they did not provide meets and bounds descriptions under the legal description.
And what is the significance to the town of being provided meets and bounds description of the property?
Well, I think legal descriptions are pretty important stuff. Counsel for Golden Sands indicated it's not important at all. That's not true. We know that in both common law and statutory law, legal descriptions are utterly important.
Right, and they're important, and what I want to get to is important to what end in the building permit context? Is it so that the town knows what property is involved in the project, or is it some other reason?
No, it's a building permit tells the building inspector where to go. Where is the land at issue? Where are the buildings going to go? So she or he can go and conduct their analysis of the land and buildings at issue.
Right. So in the building permit context, I mean, the building permit does two things. It gives you permission to build the building, and it freezes in place the use that is available at the time that you file it, right? So for the building inspector, yeah, he's got to know where the buildings are going to go so he can make sure it conforms with all of the applicable rules. But we're talking about the second purpose right now, right, which is freezing in use the property involved in the project.
Which is so what? You have to speak up.
Freezing in use, freezing in place the use of the property that's allowable at the time the permit is filed. So in that context, what does is there any additional significance to the legal description of the property other than just so you know what property is involved?
I mean, you have to know the property involved, and the building permit exception gets you the land that is described in the legal description. It gets you the building site location.
Right. So I want to know, I want to focus on that, the requirement for legal description. Now, the circuit court seems to have said that it was adequately identified to the project, notwithstanding that there was not a legal description of it. So why would it be essential for there to be a legal description and have that be necessary before the property can be adequately identified to the project?
Because you're identifying the land that is at issue. Here, the land at issue under their building permit was for 98 acres. You want to provide a legal description that provides reasonable certainty as to the land for which you are trying to put your buildings on.
And the circuit court seemed to have been satisfied that it was adequately identified. But is it your position then that the circuit court should not have been satisfied that it was adequately identified?
The circuit court thought that the building permit was adequately identified for the 98 acres. In the pages that I pointed you to earlier, the court found that it was not certain, it was unclear, and it was evolving as to the remaining land. And again, Golden Sands
right.
said...
In evolving with respect to the use, right? What part is going to be committed to growing feed, what part is going to be committed to waste disposal, and so on. But on page 87, I want you to go back there. Page 87, Circuit Court found, finding a fact, adequate identification of the 75 fields involved in the project.
The Circuit Court found that in the context of what was filed with the state of Wisconsin, that was not filed with the town. You have to go back to those earlier pages, Your Honor, that indicate what the circuit court found with respect to the building permit.
Okay. I might be missing the fact then. When was this map filed with the town?
This map was provided as a copy in one of the binders of the stuff that was provided to the state of Wisconsin.
At what time?
The same time that they filed the building permit application. The building permit application is 405 pages. The town was not required to go sifting through materials that were filed to the state of Wisconsin. There's nothing in the law of vested rights or the building permit exception that says applications to other bodies or the state of Wisconsin are important. The legislature considered that proposition just a year or two ago, and they rejected it. When you look at Assembly Bill 582, they rejected the same arguments that Golden Sands is making here. Expand the concept of vested rights beyond adjacency. Just blow up the concept of adjacency. Anything that's described whatsoever anywhere in the materials is all the land you get. So the legislature rejected that. They also rejected allowing a retroactive application of the new vested rights statute, and they also rejected the concept that filing things in the state of Wisconsin, whatever agency you're filing to, the DNR or what have you, is the moment that triggers vested rights.
When you say they rejected that, what do you mean by that?
If you look at Assembly Bill 582, and it's in our appendix, you'll see, I believe it's Section 22, and it's referenced in our brief, and it specifically points you to the language that was proposed to modify the vested rights statute further, to expand it in a way that would be consistent with the arguments that Golden Sands is making to you today. And those proposals in that Assembly Bill 582 were not accepted by the legislature.
I want to focus on this discussion regarding legal description. As I see it, there is, and as I read your argument in the briefs, it wasn't that a legal description was required, but rather here, the legal description that was given was just that of the 98 or 100 acres.
That is correct.
I think that your brief indicated, and then you also bootstrapped the new legislation, that it has to be sufficiently defined. So I don't see in your answers, I see your answers being different than your brief. The idea of legal description is, look, they set forth in the applications the legal description of the 317,000 square feet and the meets and bounds description that covered only the 98 or 100 acres. The real issue is whether or not it's sufficiently defined. Let's say it's a 403 Pine Street in the town of Nakusa building permit. Do you need the legal description for that, or is that sufficiently defined?
Well, that could be the description within the legal description, but
yes,
it is identified.
I'm not sure it's for me all that important, but are you maintaining the argument that the building permit has to have an accurate legal description? That's what I heard from this exchange, but I didn't get that from your...
Well, there's no doubt in the law of the building permit exception that it has to be complete.
And has to be well-defined.
And well-defined.
However that well-definition is done.
However it's well-defined, that's correct. And here, they had two occasions to change that legal description. They had occasion to attach maps specifically to the building permit application. It is not what the town should have known or what it knew. It is what is in the building permit application, what is within the four corners of that building permit application. And when you walk through that building permit application, it is confused, and as the circuit court found, it is evolving. And I think when you look at all of those aspects and you look at what does a legal description mean, it is important stuff. We can't just ignore what a legal description is. It's a clear and lawful definition of a property's boundaries, and what's that issue? It's of vital importance to real estate law and zoning law as well. There's been a lot of discussion about the expectations of Golden Sands. Well, what about the expectations of the community here? Under cases like McKee and Ryan and Zeeler and Bueller and Agabine and Vicente and the building height cases, zoning must evolve. No one has vested rights. This community started working on its comprehensive plan in 2008. They were nearing the five-year completion date. Mr. Wysocki knew that they were working on it. He knew there were plan commission members that were antagonistic to large dairy. He knew that another competitor of his was basically run out of town. He knew that they were nearing that five-year deadline. It would be unfair to the community who's working on trying to figure out what is the best uses of land and whether 6,000 acres of timberland should be maintained as rural preservation. It is unfair to allow him to run in, to race and try to beat the town. As one of the amicus briefs from the town, the Towns Association pointed out, zoning does not happen overnight in our communities, and that's one of the reasons why nobody has vested rights to zoning. Again, I would also like to point out the uniqueness of the situation. The land at issue is managed forest land. It has never been removed from that statutory designation.
Well, it's also privately owned, though, Council, and that's the rub we get into here.
Well, that is part of the rub.
And the private property owners that own the property could decide not to have it within the government's program any longer. They have an absolute right to do that.
And they could file that application to remove it from managed forest land.
Sure.
That has not been done here.
Well, I understand that. All I'm saying is that these things are always difficult because, of course, the community may want to keep somebody else's land to the use that it now has because they like how their next-door neighbor's property looks. But the next-door neighbor may want to change the use of his property, and if he can sell it to somebody that'll give him a few bucks for it, maybe that's what he wants to do. So, you know, to to say that it's now managed forest land, well, it's got to be something, but it's also privately owned.
It's
which
privately
is what
owned.
Causes us all the problems we
it's
have
It's privately
here.
Owned, and it's in active and actual use as timberland. And that private owner of that timberland has no expectations and no vested rights to future changes in zoning. There was no application here to – there was the application here was for the building site, the seven buildings on the 98 acres. That is all that Golden Sands gets, and we would ask this court to affirm the Court of Appeals decision and not to create new rules of law just to suit Golden Sands Dairy.
Thank you very much.
I'd like to start with a distinction that Justice Kelly made. The showing that's required to get the building permit to build buildings and the showing that's required in order to freeze your rights once you build or once you file that building permit application.
Can you clarify?
Was the map part of your building permit application?
It certainly was.
Attached to your application?
And this is supplemental appendix, pages 1 through 5, and all of the materials that you submitted.
I thought that it was. Opposing counsel said it was not.
And it is. It's.
Was it a complimentary copy?
No, Your Honor, it was not.
Well, then what do you do with the affidavit of James Wysocki that says it's a complimentary copy?
That's not what it says. The 5 pages that are the first 5 pages on the stack of materials that was provided to the town contain a cover letter, a uniform building permit application which identifies the project location, lot area is 6,388 acres, a cautionary statement to landowners about obtaining building permits that Mr. Wysocki signed, and the very map that is standing before you blown up today.
Okay.
That was
thank you. That's an important fact for us to get right.
Here.
Well, if it's an important fact, then the record, did you see the record that has a big question mark in the record as to whether the map was received, and then when you look at the record, the map isn't part of it?
I think that question and all others regarding this particular topic is resolved by the ultimate finding of fact that Justice Kelly read in Judge Egan's decision, which is that for purposes of freezing the vested rights and developing the property as a farm, the scope of that land was adequately defined in the materials that were provided to the town.
The building permit application is made to the town of Saratoga, correct?
It certainly is.
Okay. Can a building permit application to a single town create vested rights to use land beyond the boundaries of the town?
I would say no. And we're not suggesting that it does. All of the land that we are in dispute about here today is within the town of Saratoga, and it was all zoned unrestricted by Wood County zoning application during the entire time we made all these investments and at the time we filed the building permit application. And what else needs to be corrected is that the comprehensive plan was done in 2007, and there was no race. In fact, the circuit court made observations to the contrary, that the town looked like the one it was racing after we filed our building permit application. The law does not measure our rights according to the aspirations of a planning commission in a comprehensive plan document. It measures it against the zoning that was in place at the time we filed the application. And there can be no dispute about that, and there can be no dispute about what our aspirations were and what our manifest intent was. And that's what the court looks to. The law doesn't tell us what box we have to put what in a building permit application, except with respect to do we have the right, do we get the permit to build the buildings? That's what the mandamus case was about, and that's what I did say in that case.
So I just want to make sure that I'm clear. All 6,388 acres identified in the building permit application are within the town of Saratoga?
I believe so, yes.
Counsel, I'm sorry, anything else?
No, thank you.
Exhibit G is the contents of the application filed June 6, 2012. And I don't see any map in Exhibit G. Where else may you refer me to in the record to indicate that it is part of the application?
Appendix pages, supplemental pages, appendix pages 1 through 5 are a true and correct copy of the first 5 pages that sat on top of all the materials that we submitted to the town on June 6, 2012. And the last of those 5 pages is this map.
Well,
and I think the town concedes it had that map.
The problem I have is, although the cover memo, that is the via hand delivery June 6, 2012, says there's a map depicting the project site, a question mark is after that, and it's not part of what Exhibit G is. It's not contained in Exhibit G.
I don't have Exhibit G of our materials with me now, and I can't make reference to that. I'm sorry. But I think what's important here is what Justice Kelly pointed out, which is that the court made the finding that the scope and intent of our project was adequately communicated in the materials. And why do we need to do that? So that we don't have a sham. So that we don't stand here today or say that, hey, we wanted something more. For purposes of applying the bright line building permit rule, that's very, very clear here. And importantly, they never claimed that these were erroneous findings of fact. They had that opportunity. They never did. We've not been able to litigate
that. Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Well, thank you all for a really, really interesting case. I have to say, property cases are always interesting because there are really important rights that are always on both sides of the question. So it's not that there's any kind of advantage one way or the other. Thank you very much. We're going to take a brief adjournment so that some of the students can leave and other people may enter. And we will be back in a little bit for our second case of the day. We are adjourned.